Okay, in the middle of discussing the Rambam, who explains that even this Mishnah that says that one should not serve the Ribbono Shel Olam as a servant who expects to get reward, even applies to the reward of Olam Haba. Can I ask you to sit in the men's section? I'm sorry. Except I don't want them to come here with a camera and put my name up on the wall in Ne'eh Shorim. So I have enough problems.
You mentioned that word, you're going to get a bad sign.
Could you repeat what your first sentence was again?
Okay. We are in the middle of discussing the Rambam that says that this Mishnah that says that you shouldn't be like a servant who serves his master on the condition of receiving a reward, but it should be done totally altruistically because it's the right thing to do, it's the good thing to do, even applies to the reward of the world to come. That's what the Rambam says. And on that we asked, the Rambam himself contradicts himself. Because the Rambam says that the reason that we look forward to Mashiach is because that is the time that we will have the ideal conditions to be able to serve God in the most ideal way and get the greatest share in the world to come. That means that we every day yearn for Mashiach to come so we could get the greatest share in the world to come. Basically. So the Rambam himself says that's not the ideal way of serving God, yet that is part of the whole makeup of Judaism, of yearning for Mashiach, and the purpose to yearn for Mashiach is that you'll have the situation where you'll be able to have the greatest world to come, and that's not supposed to come to play in your service of God, ideally. So we already gave one answer to that, that there's a difference between wanting the world to come because I want that enjoyment, or wanting the world to come because God wants to give me that enjoyment and I want to fulfill God's, let God fulfill his purpose in creation. We gave the same example. There's a mitzvah to enjoy the Shabbos. So somebody can eat cholent because he enjoys eating cholent. And it happens to be that he has a license to do that because God said you're supposed to enjoy the Shabbos. But his main intention is to enjoy the cholent. Except the mitzvah of enjoying the Shabbos is a side thing. Or no. Really, I could go without the cholent. But I'm enjoying the cholent because God wants me to enjoy the Shabbos. I'm doing it in order to fulfill God's edict of enjoying the Shabbos. That's why I'm eating that challah. It's a much different level. Very hairline difference, but it's a very big difference. That was one answer we gave. Today I'm going to give you another answer, and then we'll go on and see other explanations of this Mishnah, specifically to begin with the Abarbanel himself, who does not like the Rambam's interpretation. Another possible explanation of the Rambam, why the Rambam says on the one hand you're not supposed to serve God even with the intention of getting the world to come, yet we yearn daily for Mashiach to come in order that we should be able to get the greatest share in the world to come, is the following. There is a concept of Avodas Perech. In Egypt, they made us work avodas perech. Perech means breaking, crumbling, something that breaks you, work that breaks you, that destroys you, debilitating work. Now, how much work is debilitating and how much is not debilitating? What is called avodas perech? So there is a halachic definition, because there is a Torah prohibition to work a Jewish slave, avodas perach. You're not allowed, if you own a Jewish slave, you're not allowed to give him avodas perach. You're not allowed to work him with avodas perach. So there has to be a halacha, what you're not allowed to do. There has to be some definition. The definition the Chazal give and the Rambam brings down is two things. Work that has no purpose. Purposeless work is avodas perach. Or work that has no end to it, because that's the same thing. If it has no end, it has no purpose. So purposeless work or endless work is avodas perach. Meaning the following. A person can work very, very hard. But if he sees a benefit, he sees a purpose in what he's doing, then the work can be exhilarating, even if it's hard work. But a person who works and sees absolutely no benefit from what he's doing, he sees no purpose in it, stam given work to keep busy, that kind of work is debilitating. The story is told of a prisoner in a Russian prison camp who was in a cell by himself, and he was told that his job was in his cell to turn a handle that came through the wall of the cell, and to turn that handle 10 hours a day. And he was told on the other side of the wall was a mill that the handle rotated, and it ground wheat for Mother Russia, that they should have flour for the army. So every day he was forced to turn this handle, thinking that he was grinding wheat and accomplishing something. At the end of 10 years, they let him free, and he asked the jailers a favor. Could he please be taken before he's set free to the other side of the wall so he could see the mill that he was operating all these years? They started to laugh. They took him to the other side of the wall and they showed him that the handle was connected to nothing. For 10 years, 10 hours a day, he turned this handle and accomplished nothing. He said that at that moment, it was more painful to him discovering that he accomplished absolutely nothing in those 10 years than the 10 years themselves. Working and you don't know what your purpose is, or you have no purpose, is debilitating work. And that is what they made us do in Egypt. Avodas perach. It says that Paro made us build cities on sand, that when they finally finished the buildings and the cities, they fell down, crumbled, because they were built on a foundation of sand, and they had to build them again and again. Because Paro was not interested in the Jewish people feeling an accomplishment. He wanted them to work and to see no accomplishment. So they built and built, and then it fell in, had to build again. And it's clear that that was Paro's intention from the end of the Sedra of Shmos. When Paro sees that Moshe and Aaron are talking about going out of Egypt, redemption, liberation, he says the people are too lazy, they're not working hard enough, that's why they have time to think of these crazy things about leaving Egypt. So tichbat ha'avoda, make them work harder. So what does he say? I'm not going to give you straw anymore to make the mortar. You're going to have to go and gather the straw yourselves, and you're going to have to produce the same quota of bricks that you used to produce when I gave you the straw without the straw. Now, Paro wasn't stupid. If I was Paro, I would tell them, I'm going to give you straw, and you're going to have to produce double the amount of bricks you used to produce. That way Paro would gain and they would work harder. Why did Paro make them work harder, but he didn't gain anything from it? He's still going to get the same quota of bricks, he's just making them work harder. The answer is that that's exactly what Paro wanted, that they should work harder and not feel they accomplished anything. They're still producing the exact same quota, just working harder to do it. Because if he gave them the ability to create more bricks, they feel an accomplishment. And that kind of work would not be debilitating and crush their feelings for freedom. That kind of work is exhilarating. The word perech in esbash, esbash is a kind of gematria. The regular gematria is every letter in the aleph beis has a number that corresponds to it. Aleph is 1, beis is 2, and so on. Yud is 10, right? Chof is 20, lamed is 30, mem is 40, and so on. There's another kind of correlation between the letters and the numbers. It's called esbash. Esbash means that you switch the aleph with a tav. Every letter in the aleph beis corresponds to the opposite end of the aleph beis. Aleph corresponds to tav. Beis corresponds to shin. Gimel to resh, and so on. So if you have a word like av, aleph beis, it becomes tav shin. Okay, and then you can work around that. Okay. So the word perech, what does it become if you substitute the last letters for the first letters? So the pei becomes a vav. And the resh becomes a gimel. Okay, resh is the third letter from the end. Gimel is the third letter from the beginning. Gimel and resh interchange. And the chaf becomes a lamed. So what do you have? Vav, gimel, lamed. What does that mean? Absolutely nothing. But it has a numerical value. Vav, gimel, lamed is 6, 3, and 30. Which is altogether how much? 39. What does that correspond to? The 39 works that are prohibited on Shabbos. 39 activities that are prohibited on Shabbos. Melecha Shabbos. What's the correlation? I think that you could say the correlation is the following. What is the antithesis of work that has no purpose to it? The antithesis, the flip side of that, is the 39 works of Shabbos. Why? Because those 39 works were the works that went into building the Mishkan. The most purposeful work that ever existed was the work that was put into building the Mishkan, which was the place where God's presence came into this world. You couldn't get a higher, more noble purpose for work. So the work with the greatest purpose, which is the antithesis of perech, which is work without a purpose. That's the connection. And therefore, it's extremely important for a person that in his service to Hashem, or any work that he's doing, he should at least know what the purpose is, what the big picture is, what's the final goal. And therefore, the Rambam says that we yearn for Mashiach, which is the ultimate purpose of this world, the most ideal circumstances to serve God. And what is the purpose of all of that? That we should be able to have the world to come. That's what God created the world for. The Rambam is not saying that we should do it because we want that reward, because we want that pleasure. But we should at least do it with having in mind what the ultimate purpose is. Because if you serve and work without a purpose, it's debilitating. So what the Rambam is talking about is not serving in order to get reward. But he's talking about yearning for Mashiach, that you are cognizant of the goal and the purpose of what everything is, both of this world and the next world. You may not be doing it because you want that reward, but you are keeping it in mind because you want to know what you're doing has an ultimate purpose to it. That is another way of understanding this Rambam, and therefore there's no contradiction. On the one hand, the Rambam says one should not serve God even with the intention of getting the world to come. But you should at least know that there's a world to come. You should know what the ultimate purpose is. You may not be serving God in order to get that reward, but at least you should know that there's a purpose. There's some end goal to all of this. Because if not, then the surface becomes debilitating. That's another possible answer. In any case, so bottom line, the Rambam explains this Mishnah in its most simple way, and that is that ideally one should not serve God with the intention of getting any reward. Shouldn't be the motivation. The motivation should be totally altruistic. We see that the Torah promises reward. We explained already that's not reward. That's ideal conditions to be able to do more mitzvahs. That's in this world. The real reward is in the world to come, and even that should not be the motivation to serve God. And even though we see that that is acceptable, that's for people who need it. But if you're on the highest level, then you should serve God altruistically. That bottom line is the Rambam. The Abarbanel doesn't like this this what's it called idea, because he says that everybody needs an incentive. And many mitzvahs, you can't say, I'm doing the mitzvah because it's the right thing to do and it is altruistically right and true, because there are many mitzvahs that don't seem to have any benefit or the fact that the mitzvah is a truism or whatever. For instance, the Gemara says, a person shouldn't say, who would want to eat chazer? Who would want to eat pig? It's disgusting. But you should say, probably tastes great. But what can I do? God said you can't do it. Meaning there's no intrinsic reason why you shouldn't eat pig. It's just that God said not to do it. So how can you do something like that altruistically? Right? There's no intrinsic reason for it. So why are you doing it? Because God said not to do it. And he's going to reward you or punish you if you do or don't do what he says. So obviously the reward and punishment is significant. The truth is that that's not really a very strong question, because the Rambam also says it could be that intrinsically there is nothing wrong with eating chazer, except that God said that it's prohibited. But once God said it's prohibited, there's something wrong with it. Not because there's something intrinsically wrong with chazer, because it's disgusting, because if it would be disgusting, people wouldn't spend tremendous amounts of money to eat it in non-kosher restaurants. Goyim wouldn't enjoy it if it was disgusting. But it's disgusting because God said it's prohibited. That makes it disgusting. But not that it's disgusting because intrinsically there's something disgusting about pork, more than anything else. And therefore, there is an idea that since God said it's prohibited, and it has an effect on my neshama that's negative, therefore, I don't want to do it because it's the wrong thing to do, because it goes against God's will. So there is such an idea, even by those kinds of mitzvahs. In any case, so the Abarbanel says that he has a different idea in explaining this Mishnah. He says that the Mishnah only is talking about serving God with the intention of getting immediate reward in this world. But to serve God, to get the eternal reward in the next world, that's okay. That is a good incentive. God created us in order that he should shower his presence on us and give us the pleasure of the world to come. And that's why he gave us the mitzvahs. And that's why he told us not to do things that will prevent us from getting that. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with serving God with the intention of acquiring the world to come. Unlike the Rambam. That's even the ideal. So what is this Mishnah talking about? Not reward, but pras. Don't serve God to get a prize in this world. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to get the ultimate reward in the next world. So in this respect, he argues on the Rambam, And he says that this Mishnah is merely talking about a person who will serve God in order to get physical, material, temporal reward in this world. That's not the idea. But to get eternal reward, that's fine. That is the ideal also. In addition, he says, there's another idea. He says, instead of looking at the reward in the future, there's another reason to serve God, of gratitude for what you have already in the past. God gave you everything you have. He created you. That should be enough of an incentive to serve Him rather than what He's going to give you in the future. What did He give you till now? He gave you a soul, He gave you a body, everything that you have. As the Medrash says, Mi hikdimani vashalei. Who paid me before I gave them? I give everything on credit, says God. Who put up a mezuzah on their house before they got a house? So I gave them the house, and then I told them to put the mezuzah on. But first I gave them the house. Who put tzitzis on their garment before they had the garment? So I gave them a garment, and I told them to put tzitzis on. And so on. So you don't need an incentive of the future to serve God. There's enough of an incentive of what you've already gotten in the past. That's another idea that the Abarbanel says. And he says that the reward in this world, like the Rambam says, is not reward at all. It's just ideal circumstances to be able to do more mitzvahs. So don't serve God and think that the reward is what you're getting in this world. For that, it's enough to serve God because of what He gave you already in this world. But if you serve God in order to get the world to come, that's perfectly okay. That's what the Abarbanel says. And he distinguishes between pras and schar. To serve God for the reward, that's fine. To serve Him for a prize in this world, that's not fine, both because that's not really the purpose. And the reward in this world is not even reward, it's just ideal circumstances to be able to do more mitzvahs. And beyond that, if that's the case, why do you have to serve God because of what He's going to give you in this world? Serve Him because of what He already gave you in this world. That is basically the Abarbanel. Now we'll go to some other ideas. Many of the commentaries are bothered by the following question. This Mishnah seems to say that it is not ideal, at least, to serve God in order to get reward. You shouldn't do that. Okay, you should do it altruistically. Yet, there's a Gemara that says the following. A person who says, Sela zu l'tzedakah, I'm giving this dollar to tzedakah, al menashe yichyu bonai, I'm doing it in order that my children should live. I want a schus, it should be a skula that my children should live. Al menashe she akabel olam haba, in order that I should be able to get the world to come. Or any similar thing. I'm giving it with an ulterior motive. Exactly, thank you. That's exactly what I was looking for. With an ulterior motive. Harezet tzadik gomer. Person is a tzadik gomer. Or, according to another version, Harezet tzedakah gemura. The tzedakah is 100% okay. Nothing wrong with giving tzedakah with an ulterior motive. Now that seems to contradict this Mishnah. Because this Mishnah says that if you serve God in order to get reward, my children should live, I should get olam haba, that's not the ideal. So there are various answers given to this. One answer is, enochanami, it doesn't say that it's the ideal. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is the Mishnah of Hasidim. Chassidim is beyond the letter of the law. That's the ideal. A chassid goes beyond what's necessary. A tzaddik does what's necessary. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is the Mishnah of chassidim. What is the real ideal, right, that's beyond what's expected? That's what it says in Pirkei Avos. What is acceptable 100% as a tzaddik? That's what it says in the Gemara. If you do it with ulterior motives, it's fine. but you're not a chassid. It's not something that's the ideal ideal. It's okay. Nothing wrong with it, but it's not the ideal. That's one way. Another way of explaining it is the following. There's a difference between mitzvahs that are between man and man, and mitzvahs that are between man and God. Mitzvahs between man and God, that's what the Mishnah is talking about. Those mitzvahs you should do altruistically. But the mitzvahs between man and man, there is a benefit in this world. And because of that, it says that you get rewarded in this world for those mitzvahs too. Eilu dvarim, sha'adam ochel peroseyem ba'olam hazeh, you get the fruits of the mitzvah in this world, both in the fact that it promotes society, it makes peace between people, and there's a reward in this world for those kind of mitzvahs. But mitzvahs bein adam lamakom, there, everything is for the world to come. Therefore, where I give tzedakah, tzedakah is a mitzvah between man and man. I'm benefiting another human being. There I can have an ulterior motive. Because it says that there is reward for mitzvahs between man and man in this world. And therefore I can say, I want a benefit from this mitzvah, my children should live. I should get the world to come, whatever it may be. But mitzvahs between man and God, that's what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is talking about. And there, it has to be done, ideally, altruistically. That is another possible answer. Then there's a third answer, and this puts the Mishnah into a different light completely. Tosfos says, this Mishnah is only talking about a person who says, I'm only doing this mitzvah on condition, al menas, on condition that I get my reward, that I win the lottery. And next day he wakes up and he finds out he didn't win the lottery. Then he regrets doing the mitzvah. That's wrong. Don't do the mitzvah on condition that if your condition is not met, you will regret doing the mitzvah. That is wrong. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. But if you won't regret, you're doing it on condition, but if the condition's not fulfilled, you won't regret doing the mitzvah. That's 100% okay. That's what it says. If you give tzedakah on condition that my children live, even if chas v'shalom your children don't live, you don't regret giving the tzedakah. But if you regret giving the tzedakah, that's something wrong. So that's another way of understanding the difference between this Mishnah or whatever. In the Abarbanel, he makes the difference. I don't know if we mentioned it or not, but I'll mention it now. You can serve God, according to the Abarbanel, with the intention of getting reward, but not with the intention of getting a prize, pras. Pras is not the ultimate reward. The ultimate reward is okay to have in mind. But to get, you know, a crumbs in this world, that not. Okay. Now let me tell you some other ideas. The Meiri. It's a very interesting shot. The Meiri says like this. All of these basically are to answer the question that there are so many sources that serving God in order to get reward is okay, that this Mishnah seems to contradict. So that's what these commentaries are giving. We've given an answer, sorry, the Rambam and the Abarbanel and Tosfos now, and the Tosfos Yontif. Those are all answers we've given already to resolve this seeming conflict. Now I'll give another answer. And that's the Meiri. The Meiri says, don't serve God on the condition, with the intention, that you are going to get a pras. He says a pras means a set, stipend. Ochle pras hamelech, it brings from Tanakh that the word pras can mean a stipend. An ongoing, consistent, constant stipend. Don't serve God with the feeling that you're always going to get benefit from it. And it's always going to be good for you. Because that's not 100% true. Sometimes, for various reasons, there's tzaddik v'rala. Sometimes a person can be a tzaddik, and he can do everything right, and in this world, things are bad for him. for various reasons. I'm not going to go into it now. It's a topic to itself, which we've discussed here many times. But for various reasons, people can have tzoras in this world, not because they're being punished, but just the opposite. It's part of their reward to make their life more difficult in this world so they'll get a bigger share of the world to come. Or for other reasons that God has. Why a person may have to suffer in this world even though it's not a punishment. Suffering is not always a punishment. There are other reasons for suffering. If that's the case, don't serve God and think that you are going to get from it a constant stipend of good, because that is not 100% true. It doesn't always follow in this world that somebody who does everything right is going to have a happy and a carefree life. That's not necessarily so. And again, the reasons are beyond our comprehension most of the time, and millions of possibilities. So therefore, that's what this Mishnah limits. It doesn't limit serving God with the intention of getting reward. Just don't think that that is the only option, and that's going to have to be, because you may be rudely disappointed and find out that you have troubles in life when you're doing everything right. Because it's possible there's an idea of tzaddik v'ra'ala. It's possible that a tzaddik can suffer in this world. Okay, so that's the Me'iri. The Hafla, he says the following. He says, don't serve God and evaluate the value of the mitzvah that you're doing according to the reward. Not that you have in mind the reward, don't have in mind the reward, that's irrelevant. You can have in mind the reward. But don't make the mitzvah valuable only according to the reward. The mitzvah has a greater value than any reward you can think of. So don't evaluate the mitzvah according to the reward. Okay. Another idea, one of the commentaries says, is the following. It says the word pras can also mean half, prusa. Prusa means a crumb, a broken piece. So to break bread, right, is you do it on a prusa. Right? So he says like this, don't serve God like a servant who serves him not for the sake of heaven, not altruistically, because if you serve God, shalom l'shmar, you're only going to get a portion of the reward. But serve him with your full heart, and then you'll get the whole reward. Don't serve him in order to get a portion. Do it for the whole thing. Don't be satisfied with just a half. Do it for the whole pot. So do it the proper way, so you'll get the entire reward, not just a portion of the reward. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, not the previous one, the Maharash, a few Lubavitcher Rebbes ago, says that usually there is a symbiotic relationship between a worker and a employer. The employer gets benefit from the worker, and the worker gets benefit from the employer. Okay. Where it's one-sided, so then that's only part, that's a half of the relationship. It says, don't serve God with only your benefit in mind. But you're benefiting God too. That doesn't mean that God benefits from our mitzvahs, but it means that God had a will and a purpose in creation, and you are enabling God to fulfill his purpose in creation. So you're doing it for God's sake too. Again, that doesn't mean that God needs our mitzvahs or benefits from them. But that's his will. This is what he wanted. So in every mitzvah, there's a benefit to God. You are strengthening God's kingdom in the world, which is ultimately for our benefit too, but it's more indirect. And you're benefiting yourself, you're getting reward. So don't serve God only with your benefit in mind, serve God with His benefit in mind too. What you're doing, L'shem Shamayim, to build God's name in the world and spread His name in the world and fulfill what the purpose of creation. That creation should recognize that they're created beings and that there's a God. Ultimately, it's all for our sake, but part of it is for our sake, but you're doing it to fulfill God's will and His plan in the world, and the other, your own personal reward. So don't make it half. Do it the full way. Have in mind that you are benefiting God's purpose in the world, at the same time, you personally are benefiting. Some of the commentaries point out, it says, "Al tiyu ke'avodim." Don't be like slaves. Right? Why didn't it say, "Al tiyu avodim"? Don't be slaves. We like slaves. We are slaves to God. So the Sfas Emes, and also the Shoshanim LeDavid, who came way before the Sfas Emes, say the same thing. They say we are not really slaves to God. The Jewish people are called Banim. We're God's children. Banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem. And even though in the Gemara there's an argument between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, when we're called children to God, and sometimes we're called slaves to God. When we do God's will, then we're called children. When we don't do God's will, then we're called slaves. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, bein kach u bein kach kruim bonim. Whether we're doing God's will or not, we're always called children. We're just not such good children, but we're children. We're never slaves to God. So therefore, the Mishnah couldn't say, al tiyu avodim shemeshamshim. Don't be slaves, because you're not slaves. But don't even be like slaves who serve their master. Now that idea of when we do God's will, we are called children. And when we don't do God's will, then we're called slaves, needs explanation. Because if it's understood simply that when we're doing mitzvahs and we're doing what's right, then we're children. And when we're doing what's wrong, then we're called slaves, that doesn't make sense. Because a slave does what he's supposed to do. If you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're not a slave, you're a rebel. So how can you be called a slave? So, therefore, I think that it means something different. We've explained this in great detail other times. You can see Mrs. Goldman, it's on a tape somewhere. So if you want the enlarged version, but I'm just going to tell it to you in a nutshell. And that is the following. There's a difference between doing God's commands and doing God's will. Osim ritzono shel makom or osim tzivuyo shel makom. You can do God's commands 100%, but miss the point a little bit of what God's will is. Meaning the following. The 613 mitzvahs are not separate things that God wants us to do. Do this, don't do this, or whatever. But they are all part of a unity of what God wants us to develop as in way of our characters, our lifestyle. The mitzvahs are means to reach an end. God has one all-encompassing will for our entire life, our entire being. But it's impossible for us to relate to it in that way. It's too overwhelming. So God broke it down into mitzvahs. The mitzvahs, the example I'd like to give is the following. Take a gigantic light bulb that's so bright and so big that you can't look at it. Take that light bulb and encase it in a globe and cut into the globe 613 little windows. Through each little window, you can see one portion of the light bulb. There's only one light bulb. But you can't look at it directly. So you need to look through these windows. How do you know what the whole light bulb looks like? If you look through each window consecutively, you'll get a composite picture of the whole light bulb. That's what mitzvahs are. That light bulb is that all one encompassing will and desire of God of how we should form and shape our lifestyle, our values, our standards, our goals. But it's too overwhelming to deal with. So God gave us mitzvahs. Each mitzvah teaches me another aspect of that. So aside from just fulfilling the mitzvah, I also have to look beyond the mitzvah into that window and see, well, what does this mitzvah reveal to me about God's will? Example, Shabbos is a very narrow mitzvah. One day a week, specific parameters, that's it. You keep Shabbos, you get rewarded. But Shabbos is supposed to teach you something that applies to your whole life. One idea is that the goal of this world is not the physical world, but the spiritual world. 6 days you work, but there's a goal beyond that, Shabbos, Olam Haba. So somebody who keeps Shabbos meticulously, but the whole week has one goal in life, earn another dollar. So he's listened to what God said, he's fulfilled the mitzvah, but he missed what its intention is. What's hiding behind it? What does this reveal to me about God's will, not just his command? The command has to bring you to understand what God's will is more than just what he commanded you to do. The example I always like to give where you can see the difference, yeah.
Rabbi, I'm disputing that prior statement you just made. What is wrong with having a great will to earn that dollar so you can give it to God and make the money, especially as a young person, and enjoy Shabbat and enjoy all of the Yom Tovim, and you do have pleasure out of your material?
Nothing wrong with that's the intention. That's not the goal. That's a means to reach an end. The physical world has to have a greater goal to it. You just mentioned other goals. But not just to have the money.
No,
fine. That's fine. That's what Shabbos teaches me. 6 days you work, but the purpose of that work has to have a higher spiritual value. So that's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
No, that's fine. You don't have to be poor. There's no mitzvah to be poor. Nowhere in the Torah it says there's a mitzvah to be poor. Okay. Hold on, let me just finish this idea. The story most of you here have heard more than once from me. Some of you maybe are hearing it the first time. It's kedai for that. Besides that, my mother-in-law told me I should say this story over as many times as I can because she's hoping someday I will listen to it too. So maybe this will be the time and I will fulfill my mother-in-law Aleha Shalom's wish. I heard this story from my day school principal in Miami, Rabbi Alexander Gross, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was a Talmid of Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. He was one of the first Torah Masorah schools started outside of New York, sent by Rav Shraga Feivel to be the principal in Miami. And I must have been about 14, 15 years old at the time, maybe even less than that. No, it could have been, that'd be less than that. And even then I was speaking, I was the poster child for the Hebrew Academy. They took me to dinners, so I would speak as a scholarship case, and hopefully the rich people would give money based on this poor boy that parents can't afford to pay tuition, whatever. In any case, so I was speaking then too, and I used to travel together with Rabbi Gross, so I had a chance to get to know him personally, even though I was a little kid. And he told me this story. He said his Rebbe told him he was once invited to eat Friday night by a balabas who wanted the kavod of this Rosh Hashiva eating in his home. So the men came home from shul, and the balabas knocked on his door, opened the door, looked inside, and turned white. He was ready to faint. So Rav Shraga Feivel said, I realized that something was not right on the other side of that door. And I was curious, so I peeked in. And right away I saw the problem. The house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and the housewife looked like she just came from Mars. He said, I right away surmised what the problem was. This poor woman was tired from preparing for Shabbos, so while the men were in shul, she probably said to herself, you know what, I think I'm going to lie down for a few minutes, get up in plenty of time to put the house in order and set the table before the men come home from shul. And she fell into a deep sleep, and she didn't wake up until they knocked on the door. So the house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and she was hovering somewhere between this world and some other world. So Shraga Feivel said, my initial thought was that this man is extremely embarrassed to bring me into this house. But as things progressed, I saw that wasn't the problem. because he understood that I would understand that this is not his fault. He wasn't sure. It's obviously his wife's fault. So that didn't bother him. Blame his wife, not me. You know what bothered him? On the table were the two collars uncovered. The wife didn't put a collar cover on them. So the man now was afraid that Rav Shraga Feivel would look at the table, see the challahs uncovered, and think that this man doesn't know you're supposed to cover your challahs, and this is what they do every week, they don't cover the challahs. So in order to make it clear that he does know, and this is also his wife's fault, he starts yelling at his wife, "You are lazy, incompetent, don't you know you're supposed to cover the challahs?" Now Rav Shraga Feivel knows that he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs. Shraga Feivel said, "At that moment I thought to myself, this is the most absurd thing I ever saw in my life." Why? Because one of the reasons we cover the challahs when we make Kiddush is because bread is more important than wine. And normally you would make a brach on the bread and then drink the wine. But Shabbos you can't do that. You have to make Kiddush first. So in order, shelo yira hapas boshto, in order that the bread should not be insulted, we cover it. Now I don't know. Maybe my wife bakes insensitive challahs. But I never came home from shul, said something not nice to my challahs. They ran up the table, locked themselves in their room until I could appease them and get them back to the table. It happened a few times with my daughters, never with my challahs. Never. Personally, I never saw an embarrassed challah in my life. And if any of you have seen one, I'm sure there's somebody professional that could help you. What does that mean? Right? Imagine. You get somebody, right, off the wall, you know, from the Kosel, never saw Shabbos table, right, and Mayor Schuster is no longer functional, but in his heyday, so he would send people to people knew that they sent by Mayor Schuster to what's it called, to spend the first Shabbos they ever saw. So you're hosting somebody like this, they walk into your house and they say, "Hey, how come those breads are covered?" Shh, you don't embarrass them. The guy think you're off the wall, not him. Embarrass the bread, how about the door? So what's the simplest idea behind it? There's deeper ideas. What's the simplest idea? That if you condition yourself not to embarrass and insult a piece of bread, you definitely will never embarrass and insult a human being. You'll be conditioned to be sensitive to other things. If you're sensitive to inanimate objects, you surely be sensitive to human beings. And here's a man, says Rav Shraga Feivel, insulting his wife publicly to defend the honor of a piece of bread. The minig he got 100%. What does it mean? What is it supposed to teach you? What are you supposed to get from it? Zero. So there's more to serving God than just doing a bunch of commands. That's the beginning. After that, learn from the command what it's supposed to do to form and shape your values, your standards, your personality, your character, and so on. That's what it means. When we're osim ritzono shel makom, when we do God's will, then we're called children. A child wants to make his parent happy. He wants to do what the parent wants, not just because the parent commanded him, but he knows the parent wants to make him into a mensch. When you're not doing God's will, you're doing mitzvahs, you're doing them as commands, then you're a slave. Slaves do commands, but you're not doing God's will. You're not doing the underlying will of God, then you're called a slave. We're not talking about people who don't keep mitzvahs. Everybody's keeping the mitzvahs. The question is, are you keeping it as God's will and look beyond the mitzvah to how it applies to your entire life? Or are you just keeping a bunch of commands and don't look beyond it? If you do look beyond it, you're a child. If you don't look beyond it, you're a slave. And Rabbi Yehuda holds, Bein kach u bein kach rim bo. Whatever, we're still children. We may not be the greatest children, but Lamaisa, Klal Yisrael, are never slaves, they're always children. Therefore, it says in the Mishnah, Al tiyu ke'avodim. Don't be like slaves, but you're not slaves. You're children, but don't be children who are like slaves who serve their master only to get reward. Okay, that pretty much, what we said. One more thing, the Ruach Chaim, Ruach Chaim V'Loshener, and we'll have finished this Mishnah, believe it or not. The Reb Chaim Volozhiner says like this. There are two kinds of servants or workers. There's a worker who's already accomplished, and he works and he gets a salary. Then there's an apprentice. Somebody who's learning how to do the job, he doesn't get paid. His pay is that he gets to learn how to do the job. He's an apprentice. Okay. Don't be like slaves who expect to get paid. You're always apprentices. Don't think that you're accomplished already. You're always on the learning side. God's constantly educating you. So what should pay you? You're an apprentice. So don't expect a reward aside from the fact that God is educating you and you're his apprentice. So what do you need a reward for? Right? You haven't never reached the level where you deserve a salary. You're constantly being nurtured by God as an apprentice. That in itself is enough of a reward. Don't expect to get paid also.